What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. Robbie Starbuck, that's his name. He is a he's the host of Robbie Starbuck Show. Imagine that. He also he's Cuban American. Where was it? I forget where he used to work. Okay, maybe Americans for Prosperity, Tennessee. But I thought he was affiliated with a media company, maybe in the Blaze or Daily Wire. I forget which, but. He had this piece the other day. He posted it up at Twitter, and it talks about UNC Chapel Hill, and there is a training module. And if you don't work in any kind of like a large corporation or government institution or agency or something, maybe you don't know what these things look like, but basically. It's sort of like a Zoom call, right? It's like you sit in front of a monitor, in front of a computer or something, and you watch a video. Sometimes they'll ask you questions to make sure that you're not just, you know, have it turned on and not paying any attention. So they do it for training and onboarding when you get hired at places and that sort of stuff. Well, there's a training module right now from UNC where they teach a thing called unpacking whiteness, because apparently whiteness went on vacation and I guess then returned home, and then you got to just, you know, you got to unpack it or something. And so he's gotten a hold of a couple of these videos. And so I will play for you the videos that he has pushed out there, that he's published. And they're disturbing. And the thing I always try to keep in mind on some of this stuff is, and look, I am all for having the, quote, you know, honest conversation about our real history. Totally fine with all of that. However, when you start ascribing characteristics or attributes to all people based on an immutable characteristic like race, right, that's where you start running afoul of an honest conversation. That's where you start getting into some bigotry and prejudice and racism. Okay, so just as a heads up on that, when you start, you know, for example, if you say something like the whites, right? You say the fill in the blank. When you start saying stuff like that, that's usually a good sign. Okay, that you're on a path that's no good. Okay, just a heads up. So. Here is one of the training modules, Unpacking Whiteness, where at UNC they teach that whiteness is a social construct with no biological or scientific foundation. Okay, so there's no biological or scientific foundation to a Caucasian, to people like myself. Full disclosure, I am somewhat pigmentally, is that the word for it, limited, right? So there's no biological reason for this. There's no scientific reason for this. It's just all in my head. It's a construct. Okay. In videos, in this module, all white people are told that they have white supremacy through white privilege, and it's described as a, quote, delusional mental state and a sickness or a mental illness. So what does that mean? It means that all white people are mentally ill. That is the premise that this UNC Chapel Hill training module. Keep in mind, a training module. They are teaching this. They are training people in this. So if you are white, you're mentally ill. You are suffering under a delusional mental state. After this module, one can deduce that whiteness or white privilege is a mental illness, that all white people have white privilege or engage in white supremacy, and therefore all white people are mentally ill. And if you don't think she's talking about all white people, well, she says it, actually, in the final video here, just to clear up any confusion. He says this is pure racism. So let me go ahead and start with this, because this is a woman. Let me see here if I can pull up the... Right. So she puts out these questions to participants in the program, and then she is going over the answers that she has received. Okay. And so here is, and so, and now she's reacting to what the answers she's received are.
Oh, takeaways from this for me were kind of depressing, frankly, because I think that the vast majority of white people don't see themselves as being part of a white supremacist system. At least the people that replied to me. They saw it as something that other white people do. Yet I got all of these replies from people of color who are having like daily experiences of white supremacy. So I want to know, like, who are all these other white people that are actually perpetuating white supremacy? And this goes to like what I think I talk about often is this idea that white supremacy is in all of us, right? We've all been indoctrinated in it, and we all perpetuate it in different ways. Sometimes it's turned inward in a form of self-loathing because whiteness is glorified in a white supremacist system. And in other situations, it is turned outward against people of color. So, and this is something I think I intend to talk about a bit more, maybe in future videos. We'll see how this one goes, if you all like it. But those are my higher level takeaways from those two tweets, that there is a lot of work to be done to encourage white people to actually be uncomfortable in acknowledging their own white supremacy, because I did not see much of that, just a handful of people. And that's the thing that concerns me. So
that's the thing what concerns her, is that the people that were participating in these trainings were they recognize there's white supremacy, but they say it's other whites that are doing it, it's not them. Which, of course, this is them bargaining. This is them, right, feeding the alligator in the hopes that it eats them last. They're like, okay, fine, yes, yes, I will concede that this is the case. This thing that you're alleging is true, because I don't want to be seen as part of that awful thing. So I will say it's true, so I'm your ally, but it's not me. And so she's lamenting, this is, by the way, Sonia Gupta, who is leading this module, this Ready something or other, Project Ready, which is in collaboration between UNC School of Information and Library Science and the Wake County Public Schools. That's what this is. This training module is going into Wake County Public Schools from the librarians, which, by the way, in case we haven't noticed it by now, but the librarians, like, the apparently, like, that whole profession is just jam-packed full of communists. I'm not sure when that happened, but I've been monitoring this for a couple of months now, and it's like it has gone full-on commie. It's kind of nuts, like the American Librarians Association or something. Holy Toledo. Right? But I mean, you know, give me the generation, I'll give you your revolution. Project Ready is a collaboration between UNC's School of Information and Library Science, which it's not a science, okay? Not a science. Just you can't just throw science after a word and then make it into a science. And I say that as one who has a minor in political science, right? It's not science. Okay. But it's a collaboration between UNC's School of Information and Library Services, or sorry, Library Science, and Wake County Public Schools. The initiative describes itself as a free online professional development program targeting teachers and school librarians. What could go wrong teaching all of the children's teachers and librarians that all whites are racist? What could go wrong? That's right. Yeah, that's that. That's how you get past racism, right? Is you make everybody believe things about each other based on the color of their skin. That's the way you get past it, right? Obviously so. The module, this training module, starts off by stating, quote, if you identify as white, oh, okay, well, hang on a second. All right, well, then how about this? Nobody identify as white anymore. There you go. Look at me, problem solved. I have solved the problem, everybody. Nobody identify as white anymore, and whiteness is gone. There, I unpacked it completely. And not only did I unpack it, I zipped it back up, and I stored it in the attic. We never even have to think about it ever again. Look at that. Solving all of the world's problems. That's what I do here. If you identify as white, this module might elicit strong emotions such as anger, denial, shame, guilt, and embarrassment. By the way, this is how they, the designers of these modules, along with like frauds like Robin DiAngelo, this is how, and Ibram X. Kendi, right? This is essentially shut-uppery. That's what they do here, is to say, okay, I'm going to call you a name, and if you react in any kind of a negative way, anything other than to say, yes, I see, well, that is your truth, that's your lived experience, right? So if I respond in any other way, then you have prejudged me, right? And you've told me that you will prejudge me, that if I react negatively to being called a terrible name, that if I react poorly, if I react in any of these ways, then that means that I am guilty of that which you accuse me, which is a very convenient rhetorical device. It's a trap, actually. It's a rhetorical trap, right? There's no way out. They construct it. And this is why, by the way, even Harvard, you know, sort of the birthplace of critical race theory studies and all this garbage, which actually it's not the birthplace. Well, I mean, it's the birthplace of CRT, but it really all just traces back to, you know, Hegel and Marx, but whatever. The point here is that Harvard actually did an analysis a couple of years ago about these types of trainings and whether or not they actually are of benefit in the workplace. And it turns out that people hate each other, hate their coworkers more after these meetings, after these trainings. In other words, they do more damage. You're not actually helping. You're not solving any of the problems. You're not advancing the society. You're not fighting systemic oppression or supremacy or any of it. You're making people angry at each other. That's all you do. When they were not angry beforehand. It says it's important to get used to the uncomfortable feeling, to sit with it, and then to harness it in positive ways that allow you to begin to dismantle it. This is Ibram X. Kendi. That's all this is, which is, you know, the antidote to racism in the past is racism now, is prejudice now, is discrimination now. That's what this is. And then if you're not actively, quote, anti-racist, and that means dismantling all of the institutions, which, by the way, happen to be, you know, free market capitalism and Western Enlightenment, right? If you're not tearing it all down, then you're part of the problem. Those are the only options you have, which 20 years ago, we summed this up by saying, you will be made to care, right? The issues change, but the underlying issue is always the same, which is the revolution, right? The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? All right, I'm going to see if I can play. Let me see if I can play some of this. This is Coleman Hughes, and he's a podcaster guy. He's a philosophy guy. He's got a new book out called Color Blindness, and he appeared on The View. And so this is first him talking with Whoopi Goldberg here about the book. And oh, hang on a second. Here we go.
First question that I should ask you to do is explain to folks what you mean by this. Arguments for a colorblind America. What do you mean when you say that?
So a lot of people equate colorblindness to I don't see race or to pretending not to see race. I think that's a big mistake. We all see race, right? And we're all capable of being racially biased, so we should all be self-aware to that possibility. My argument is not for that. My argument is that we should try our very best to treat people without regard to race, both in our personal lives and our public policy.
Of course.
And the reason I wrote this book, thank you. The reason I wrote this book is because in the past 10 years, it has become very popular to, in the name of anti-racism, teach a kind of philosophy to our children and in general that says your race is everything. Right, and I think that is the wrong way to fight racism, and that's why I wrote this book at this time.
Can I, I'm sorry, baby. Can I just point out that there is a reason for that? You know, when I went to school, getting any information about anyone's race was not taught. History, there was no black history. None of those things were taught. And here in America, 100 years ago when I was a young woman, that's how people saw you. That's how they judged you. So I think, I don't want to say it's your youth, but I think you have a point, but I think you have to also take into consideration what people have lived through in order to understand why there has been such a pointing of very specific racial things, like women couldn't go to get into colleges. If you are a black person, there are a lot of colleges wouldn't accept you. Trying to equal the playing field. I think that's what a lot of folks were, have been trying to do. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I think that's your experience and that's valid. You know, as a counterpoint, when I was in fifth grade, we all watched Roots together in public school. So these are different experiences. I think it's also different generations. It's different parts of the country, right? We have very different cultures all living together in one country. So I'm not going to deny that. But I think I view this notion of a colorblind society similar to the idea of a peaceful society, which is to say it's an ideal, it's a North Star. And the point is not that we're ever going to get there, we're not going to touch it, but we have to know when we're going forward and when we're going backwards. And we're going backwards when we're doing woke kindergarten in San Francisco, you know, with you didn't hear about this story?
No, you know, but
wait, I
want to
get to the
part
of the book. Public policies that address socioeconomic differences would be better at benefiting disadvantaged groups, and that race-based policies often hurt the very people they're trying to help. What are some examples of policies that would be better at reducing racial disparities?
So my overall argument is that class, socioeconomics, is a better proxy for disadvantage. We all want to help the disadvantaged, and the question is, how do we identify them, right? The default right now in a lot of areas of policy is to use, you know, black and Hispanic identity as a proxy for disadvantage. And my argument is that you actually get a better picture of who needs help by looking at socioeconomics and income. That picks out people in a more accurate way.
When you say that socioeconomics picks out people in a better way than race, when you do look at the socioeconomics, you see the huge disparity between white households and black households. You see the huge disparity between white households and Hispanic households. So your argument, and I've read your book twice because I wanted to give it a chance, your argument that race has no place in that equation is really fundamentally flawed.
That's Sonny Hostin.
Two separate questions. One is whether racial group is socioeconomically the same. I agree with you. They're not. Of course, I agree with that fully. The question is, how do you address that in the way that actually targets poverty the best?
Great.
And what Martin Luther King wrote in his book Why We Can't Wait is he called it, we need a Bill of Rights for the disadvantaged. And he said, yes, we should address racial inequality. Yes, we should address the legacy of slavery. But the way to do that is on the basis of class. And that will disproportionately target blacks and Hispanics because they're disproportionately poor, but it will be doing so in a way that also helps the white poor, in a way that addresses poverty as the thing to be addressed.
That part is true, but as you are a student of Dr. King, I'm not only a student of Dr. King, I know his daughter, Bernice.
Now
so I'm going to
get
to my question.
She's infallible.
Go ahead, go right ahead.
Sunny Halston's infallible because she knows Dr. King's daughter.
You claim that colorblindness was the goal of the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. based upon Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, you know, content of character versus the color of skin. Bernice, Dr. King's daughter, points out that 4 years after giving that speech, actually, Dr. King also said this. A society that has done something special against the Negro for hundreds of years must now do something special for Negroes. He also said in 1968, it was about less than a week before he was assassinated, this country never stops to realize that they owe a people kept in slavery for 244 years. So rather than class, he did write about that earlier on, right before his death. He made the argument for racial equality and racial reparations. And so your argument for colorblindness, I think, is something that the right has co-opted. And so many in the black community, if I'm being honest with you, because I want to be, believe that you are being used as a pawn by the right and that you're a charlatan of sorts.
You've never voted for a Republican.
So how do you...
You've
said that you're a conservative.
No, you did.
You actually said that in a podcast that you did 2 weeks ago.
I said I was a conservative.
He's not. Yes, you did.
So, but my question to you, my question to you is, how do you respond to
these wild, crazy accusations I'm making?
I think it's very important. The quote that you just pointed out about doing something special for the Negro, that's from the book Why We Can't Wait that I just mentioned.
Yes.
A couple paragraphs later, he lays out exactly what that something special was, and it was the Bill of Rights for the Disadvantaged, a broad class-based policy.
But he also says you must include race.
No, he didn't. He says it's
He does.
Okay, well, everyone should go read the book Why We Can't Wait. Let's not get sidetracked by that. I don't think I've been co-opted by anyone. I've only voted twice, both for Democrats. Mm-hmm. Although I'm an independent, I would vote for a Republican, probably a non-Trump Republican if they were compelling. I don't think there's any evidence I've been co-opted by anyone, and I think that that's an ad hominem tactic people use to not address really the important conversations we're having here. And I think it's better, and it would be better for everyone if we stuck to the topics rather than make it about me.
There you go. He's exactly right. Good for Coleman Hughes. His book is The End of Race Politics. He has a podcast called Conversations with Coleman. I've been listening to his podcast. I've been watching this guy reading his stuff for a couple of years now. The dude is not a conservative, okay? This is absurd to me. And the fact that she's like, oh, well, you know, I know Bernice. And so Bernice says this. And Coleman Hughes, see, Sunny Hostin, she made a mistake here. She thought Coleman Hughes was a surface intellectual, like most of the, quote, intellectuals that they bring in there. This guy is not. And so when she brings up that quote about reparations or whatever, Coleman knows exactly what she's talking about because he has read King's book. And immediately points to the paragraph where that occurs, and Hostin quite clearly does not know what she's talking about. She read that quote off of a card. So she got this information, she's presenting it as if she knows what she's talking about, as if she is a deep thinker, and Coleman just guts her. Right? And think about why. What is his argument? His argument is address inequality by going after the socioeconomics, and you'll scoop up everybody that need the help. And she doesn't want that to happen. We have to look at race. It's got to be all about race. All right, it is tourney time, and it's also a good time to check out DraftKings Sportsbook, which is now live in North Carolina. You can legally bet on all of your favorite sports anytime, anywhere in the state with DraftKings, an official sports betting partner of NASCAR. You watching the basketball tournament games? Make bets as you watch and get fast and easy payouts. DraftKings has tons of the best features like parlays for multiple games, player props, which focus on an individual player and their performance within a specific game. Also, social betting groups where you can share your bets with your friends in real time. I have a special promo for you as well. You download the DraftKings Sportsbook app on your phone or tablet and use the code PETE, P-E-T-E. You bet $5 and you get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code PETE. The crown is yours, King or Queen. But this is a limited time offer, so take advantage. Gambling problem? Call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms are at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. Also, NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and is used under license. Got a message here from Chris. Pete, you may be aware of this, but if not, in a fairly recent episode of Finding Your Roots with Dr. Louis Gates Jr., Sonny Hostin was a guest. Gates revealed to her that her ancestors not only owned slaves, but were actually involved in the slave trade. She was not pleased. I do remember that. She said she was deeply disappointed to find out her ancestors' family business was rooted in the slave trade. The Washington Examiner said that, quotes her as saying, "When I found out, what I found out was my mother's family, while they are Puerto Rican, they actually originate from Spain. And the reason they moved to Puerto Rico is because the slave trade had been sort of canceled in Spain and then Curacao, and then they moved all of their slaves to Puerto Rico. And so the business, the family business, I have been told that they were printers and journalists, but they were, in fact, enslavers. It was deeply disappointing." All right, this woman who has been lobbying for reparations, she's going to have to come out of pocket, I suspect. Yeah. The project that we've been talking about this hour is called Project Ready, the collaboration between UNC and Wake County Public Schools called Unpacking Whiteness, and looking to come to a school near you. And by the way, they say that if you are promoting this colorblindness term, that's actually a form of ableist language as well, because colorblind. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.